Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Ty Bannerman. The Trump administration has made its opposition to gender-affirming care a key part of its health policy, with insurers like UnitedHealthcare and Blue Cross Blue Shield subsequently dropping support for certain medication and procedures. But the New Mexico Human Rights Act offers protections based on gender identity, including transgender and non-binary. How will that law and federal policy interact? And what about the mental health and well-being of those New Mexicans who find themselves in the crosshairs of a hostile federal government? This week on Let's Talk New Mexico, we'll be taking a look at threats to transgender rights in New Mexico, and we'll be talking to the folks who are doing their best to make sure New Mexicans get the care they need. And we want to hear from you. Are you someone or do you care about someone who is transgender or gender nonconforming? How are you coping with the current administration's actions? Who do you turn to for support? And what advice do you have for folks who may feel especially uncomfortable at this time? Email your questions and comments to letstalk@kunm.org or call in 505-277-5866. And also, we will be touching on some tough topics today, so I would like to remind listeners that the New Mexico Crisis and Access Line is available 24 hours a day at 988 and offers trained professionals who can offer support or even just someone to talk to. So we have several guests this morning. I'm going to introduce each of us and their pronouns. I'm he, him, by the way. So Adrian Lawyer is the co-founder and executive director of the Transgender Resource Center. Good morning, Adrian.
Thanks for having me, Ty.
And Lazarus Letcher is a musician and doctoral student here at UNM.
Morning.
Happy to have you here, Lazarus. Deanna Warren is an attorney with the ACLU of New Mexico who is joining us by Zoom. Thank you for joining us today.
Good morning.
And we're going to start today with a personal story from Dee. Good morning, Dee.
Good morning.
So Dee is not your full name. You're choosing to stay anonymous this morning. Why do you feel that it's important to withhold your identity for this conversation?
I don't think that so I'm going to be sharing some things that happened to me. And I don't think that my personal identity is necessary to understand the impact of the story. And also, I mean, a trans non-binary person online
right.
is just a danger.
Mm-hmm. So the way we got in contact, Dee, is that you reached out to the Nob Hill News, a news outlet that I write and edit for, with a story about an incident that happened at a local Walgreens when you were trying to get some medication filled. Could you describe what happened?
Yeah. So on December 24th, I went into my local Walgreens, as I had been doing for an entire year, to get my testosterone. I had started testosterone at the beginning of last year and have been going to that Walgreens for years more. That day, the pharmacist tech sort of stepped back and the pharmacist stepped forward and said, "Why do you take this medication?" And I said, "To affirm my gender." And the pharmacist explained that he would not fill the prescription, that going forward, he would not be filling the prescription. He also said, though, that like the other pharmacist had already filled this prescription. So I was able to get it that day. And that going forward, if I chose to stay there, the other one was willing to continue to fill them, but it would just probably be delayed. And you know, just to say, like, this is the pharmacist who I've gotten my COVID shots from, who was almost always the pharmacist who was there when I would go in and pick up medication. He's the one who I talked to when I first started testosterone. He gave that information. I said, "Is this because you don't want to affirm my gender?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "Okay." He went back and then I burst into tears in the middle of the Walgreens. And the pharmacist tech was really kind about helping me check out. I was shaking.
Yeah. So like, what were your thoughts at that moment?
I was stunned. I hadn't realized that this was a thing that could happen. It never would have occurred to me. And I think as it was happening, it was just this moment of I have felt quite sheltered in New Mexico in many ways over the past year. And earlier that month, I mean, we'll be talking more about what's been happening with Blue Cross Blue Shield and other insurance. But, you know, I had found out that my gender affirming care wouldn't be covered in the next year. And then to have that happen, it was really shocking. It was really scary that it was something that could happen. And it was really sad for me to sort of find out that that I had thought that I was part of, that I was in community. Mm-hmm. You know, like this was my neighborhood pharmacy. I walk there every time. Like I said, I felt like I had a relationship with this pharmacist. And to find out that that he didn't want to be in community with me.
Right. So it's not just the inconvenience of having to maybe wait a little longer or something for a prescription to be filled, but also this feeling of almost betrayal.
Yeah, and sort of just this like eye opening, like, oh, actually, I think just it just shocked me, mm-hmm. and it has taken me some time afterwards to sort of every time I go out to do errands, mm-hmm. every time I go out into the community. There's a part of my nervous system that is like, this is not safe. Mm-hmm. Like, you do not know who approves of the decisions you're making in your life or the person that you are.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Deanna Warren, you are an attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union of New Mexico. Could you put Dee's experience into context for us? Under what circumstances can a pharmacist refuse to fill someone's medication?
Yeah, and first I'd like to say that I'm so sorry that that happened to you. Obviously at the ACLU of New Mexico and broadly at the ACLU, we believe that gender-affirming care is healthcare, full stop. And I think in these moments we come up against, you know, the clash of individual rights, and we've seen this happen in a number of contexts. And so individuals who claim a religious or moral exemption are allowed to essentially refuse care. We don't agree with these policies, obviously, but we have seen them come up against a person's right to not be discriminated against based on their gender identity. So here in New Mexico, we have the Reproductive and Gender-Affirming Healthcare Freedom Act, which prevents public bodies from discriminating against somebody seeking gender-affirming care and other reproductive health care. And so asserting those rights in these moments when somebody is claiming that they can't provide care for religious or moral reasons is difficult. And that's where you get the clash of rights. But in theory, anyone can deny access to medication, contraception on the basis that they have a religious or conscious moral objection to that care.
Now, you said that a public body is prevented from discriminating based on gender identity and so forth. What do you mean by a public body?
Yeah, so a public body is any public entity, so state entity, for example, and any of their employees or contractors. So you might think of this as a public hospital, as a school, anything that is public and part an arm of the state or government.
Okay, we have a phone call from Glenn in Jemez Springs. Good morning, Glenn. What do you want to add to the conversation today?
Yes, I have friends, family member who is trans, and I am so thankful for having this program today. I happen to be a Christian, and it's very upsetting to me when I hear other Christians who do not have loving hearts and minds when it comes to transgender issues. So kind of a message to anybody out there who doesn't understand, doesn't accept and love our neighbor. That's something I do, and I invite others to do it.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Glenn. I really appreciate your words. So, Deanna, back to you. A pharmacist refusing to fill a prescription does happen from time to time in New Mexico. You mentioned contraception as something where this has occurred in the past. But would a pharmacist have a right to refuse filling any medication, like, say, antidepressants or something similar?
So theoretically, yes. If this this pharmacist had a strongly held belief that the provision of antidepressants violated their particular religious or moral ideals. And so it's really a test of whether those beliefs are real and actual, and that prevents them or that infringes on their religious rights in that context.
So that's like they can't just decide on a whim. Like it has to be something very deeply held, as I believe the language is that you used.
Yes, okay. Which is a really hard thing to assess when you're an individual going to a pharmacy. I can't tell what a person's deeply held religious beliefs are. Mm-hmm. And so this often comes up in the context of litigation.
Okay. So, Adrian Lawyer, you are the director of the Transgender Resource Center. Is Dee's experience something that you've heard of happening before?
Actually, in New Mexico, no. This is the first time I've ever heard a story like this.
So that's good to know.
We've been around since 2007.
So it's pretty unusual. Good. So it is apparently legal for this kind of discrimination to take place, but it is certainly a hardship for someone to deal with that, not just because they might not be able to get the medication they need, but also because, like Dee said, it could be very emotionally painful. Do you have recommendations for folks who find themselves facing a similar situation who might be in need of some emotional support after something like that?
Absolutely. We definitely want people to reach out to the Transgender Resource Center if they're having these experiences. A, because we want to document them. The fact that I haven't heard of somebody like Dee does not mean that this has not happened to somebody. And especially when you think out to the rural parts of our state, this could be something that is happening that we're just not having reported to us. So we would love for people to reach out to us for the documentation of these incidents, but also because we can offer that emotional support and sometimes material support as well.
And we do have a link to the transgender resource on the website. Is there a hotline or something similar for folks who might be in need of emotional support?
Well, for that, we actually love the crisis line and also Agora. And there are some trans-specific hotlines like Trans Lifeline, that's a national call-in line, and chat and text line as well. So there are many different resources. Some of them are listed on our website, and we can definitely provide them as well.
Okay. And that line is at 988. So Dee, as you pointed out, you were able to get the medication you needed that day, and then you were able to get how did you go about finding a pharmacy that works for your needs?
Yeah, I Googled LGBTQ-friendly pharmacy, Albuquerque, which didn't actually come up with anything particularly obvious. But I had heard, I have a lot of people in my life who use Duran Central, and I called them and asked if they would fill this prescription and if I could expect something like this to happen again. And they were like, no. Of course we do. So I've switched to them now.
And how did that feel when you contacted them and they sort of reacted with, what are you talking about? Why would anybody do that?
Yeah. I mean, it felt affirming. Mm-hmm. It felt, this has been a remarkably upsetting experience. Mm-hmm. Sort of, every time that I talk about it and bring it up, it is like all of these emotions come to the fore, mm-hmm. and it really helps to be met with empathy mm-hmm. And understanding, and just sort of like, yes, you, we will make it possible for you to access that medication, which your doctor has prescribed for you and which you have been taking for a year.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Ty Bannerman. We are talking about discrimination against transgender and non-binary individuals. And we want to hear from you. Dial 505-277-5866. Still to come, we are going to dive into how data collection through social media could be a threat to folks who could face prejudice if their information is misused. And we will be right back.
Support comes from Yudos Mediterranean, a family-owned business serving homemade, casual Greek and Mediterranean food in Albuquerque's University area since 1978. Located at 106 Cornell Drive or at yudosabq.com.
Please join us in thanking our business and nonprofit underwriters for their continued financial support. Because of their support, our mission will continue as your trusted source of award-winning local news and music. KUNM, powered by you.
During the Great Migration, millions of African Americans moved from the rural South to the North. Isabel Wilkerson wrote, "By their actions, they did not dream the American dream. They willed it into being by a definition of their own choosing." Music inspired by the Great Migration on the next performance today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. We are discussing transgender rights in the age of Trump. You can email comments to letstalk@kunm.org or give us a call at 505-277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. Now, Lazarus Letcher is a musician here in Albuquerque. And again, you've had some difficulty in getting the medical care that you need as well.
Correct, yes.
This time in terms of coverage by one of the insurance providers listed through Be Well New Mexico, the state's Affordable Care Act marketplace. So can you tell me about your experience and how you realized that Blue Cross Blue Shield was changing its policies?
Yeah, so I went to the Be Well New Mexico website in 2024 to find care. They've got a really handy tool where you can type in what prescriptions you take, what doctor you go to, and they'll find you the most comprehensive and most affordable plan for you. Mm-hmm. And so I was matched with the Blue Cross Blue Shield Gold plan because my testosterone, which I've taken for a decade now with only delightful side effects, would only be $20, which was incredible. So I just let that plan roll over into 2025. I let that plan roll over into 2026. And then on social media, on kind of the trans online whisper network, I started to see warnings that if you had Blue Cross Blue Shield or United through the Be Well New Mexico website, that your trans healthcare would no longer be covered.
So Blue Cross Blue Shield did not inform you directly of this?
No.
What did they say when you called them for more information?
They seemed as confused as we were, to be honest, and they even matched us with someone whose title was, I believe, gender-affirming care coordinator at the national level, and he typed in, you know, the medications that I took and that my trans femme partner took and assured us they would be covered. The thing is I don't think he put them in for gender-affirming care. I want to name that almost, I think every medication that trans people take for gender-affirming care, our cis community members also take.
And that is a really good point. And Adrian, I wanted to ask you a bit about that. Some of our listeners may not really be familiar with the term gender affirming care. So could you maybe give us a rundown on what that means?
It's interesting that that's become a political term now, because at the Transgender Resource Center, we think that gender affirming care is health care that affirms you and your gender. So even if I go in for strep throat, I still need to have somebody use my correct name and my correct pronouns. Mm-hmm. I still need to have people at the front desk all the way back to the provider who respect me and treat me with care. And so that is gender-affirming care to me, is going to a provider where I know I'm safe and I'm going to be treated with compassion and dignity as a transgender person. But what we tend to mean by that in the discourse right now is any use of medications, surgeries, or even behavioral health to help folks who are transitioning in our parlance.
We have a message from Amity, who contacted us through the SpeakPipe app on the on our website. Could we hear from that, please?
Hi, my name is Amity Calvin. I'm a family medicine doctor here in Albuquerque and also a trans person. And boy, if there's at least one bit of advice I have, it's that as long as cisgender people want testosterone and estrogen, which they do, those medications will remain available. It'll just be a question of how to get them. Highly recommend that folks look on GoodRx to compare prices of testosterone, estrogen, spironolactone at different pharmacies. Sometimes they're very similar, sometimes very, very different for your specific dose. These medications will not be going away the same way they tried to get rid of mifepristone, because what? Cisgender people love testosterone and they love estrogen. Those are staying put. Good luck to everyone out there.
And thanks for contacting us, Amity. So, Adrian, just to be clear, gender-affirming care is not just for trans people, right?
Exactly right. We think that anything, many, many elective surgeries like hair transplant surgery and liposuction, you know, we think of as being in pursuit of conforming to an unattainable ideal of gender, right? An unattainable, perfect gender presentation. Mm-hmm. So we don't think this is restricted to trans people. That's why in these plan documents, it does still cover these medications and these procedures. It just says it's not covered if it's for sex trait
modification.
I want to say rejection every time. Sex trait rejection, which I do, by the way. I do reject some of my sex trait. But if it is for the purpose of sex trait modification, mm-hmm. then it is not covered. That's what triggers the non-coverage.
I see. So Source NM, who did the original reporting on Lazarus's story, did reach out to Blue Cross Blue Shield and received a statement from Amanda Douglas, the manager of business communications. She said that the company is, quote, committed to providing access to quality, cost-effective care. We are here to support our members in a thoughtful way as we navigate these regulatory changes in compliance with federal, state, and local laws. What's your take on that, Lazarus?
Well, I don't want us to get fined. It feels like pre-compliance. It also feels so sneaky. Like Adrian already mentioned, the language that was listed in my plan was sex trait modification, which is not something I've heard before. I typically look for the term gender-affirming care. That's the most common parlance. So it also seems like a cop-out to kind of hide this language in the plan is what it felt like. They didn't use the term gender-affirming care. They didn't use the term transition. I don't understand why a $20 medication I've taken for a decade is no longer covered by the exact same insurer under the exact same plan that I've had for almost my entire transition.
So you were able to find coverage that would suit your needs. Could you tell us about the process that you, how you went about doing that?
It took about 3 hours on the phone with Blue Cross Blue Shield, and we were assured that if I switched from the on-market plan, which is what you get through Be Well New Mexico, to their off-market plan, that my trans-related care would be covered. I already had appointments in the books to get a much-needed hysterectomy this year, and the person we talked to on the phone assured me that if I'd stayed on the Be Well plan, that my hysterectomy would not be covered and that I would be looking at around $25,000 out of pocket.
Wow. Adrian, are you aware of other insurance companies that are dropping this kind of care?
United Healthcare is the other one that we received the plan documents for on the marketplace that had the same language. It was six different plans that had cut off this care. I do just want to really quickly mention, because I think it's important and often overlooked, that not only are there carve-outs for cisgender folks to get these medications and treatments, there are also carve-outs for intersex people, especially even little babies and children, to be treated this way non-consensually. So these same exact treatments can be used on kids without their consent if they're intersex, but not with their consent if they're trans. And, you know, we're talking about teenagers for trans. In the trans world, there's no children that receive surgery. The earliest you could ever receive a surgery would be, you know, 16 probably.
Mm. We actually have a caller that's has a question about precisely this issue. That's N from, well, I'm not, it looks like, not sure where you're from, N, but go ahead and tell it from Albuquerque. Go ahead and fill us in.
Hi, I can use my first name. I won't use my last. My okay. name's Nicole. I'm from Albuquerque. I actually know Laz and Adrian. Hey. Yeah, and I'm calling because I'm a queer parent of a trans kid who's five. And I am, of course, deeply concerned about their choices in the future in terms of healthcare and gender affirming care. And I'm just curious, from all the good folks on this call, who can speak to what they're seeing in terms of state protections in the midst of this federal onslaught of rolling back rights, and what we might do to continue to fight to make sure that trans kids, trans folks of all, and trans and non-binary folks of all ages have access to the care that they need and deserve.
So, Deanna, from the ACLU, are there any laws that are addressing this kind of discrimination that we're seeing?
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, the Reproductive and Gender Affirming Healthcare Freedom Act and the Reproductive and Gender Affirming Healthcare Protection Act should prevent public bodies from discriminating against just this kind of care. I think the complication here is with the onslaught of guidance from the federal government, insurance coverage plans, hospitals are feeling pressured into, I think somebody mentioned earlier, pre-compliance. Mm. And so really making these distinctions between the care that a person would receive for gender-affirming care and using those medications we discussed and for sex trait changes versus for any other reason. And so here in New Mexico, we'll continue to push back at those policies. We do think they're discriminatory and we do think they violate the law. I think making these issues visible and pushing back and highlighting stories like these is really important for asserting our rights under those state laws.
Okay, and we also have another call from Albuquerque. Good morning, M.
Yes, hi. I'm a physician here at UNM, and I provide care for children and adolescents and young adults for transgender care. And hi to Adrian. He knows who I am. But I wanted to call with a little story that really was upsetting, but and then just make a broader comment that I actually had a patient was refused their testosterone, and the pharmacist at Walgreens lied to the patient and told the patient that my license was expired and that that was his excuse for not filling the prescription, which was an incredible lie. It sent me into a panic because the patient, of course, called me and I had to verify that, no, in fact, my license was fine. So they sometimes will use really nefarious means to interfere with the medical care for our patients. And so just be aware of that. And I just had to send them to another pharmacy and they did fine. But I have personal experience, having previously lived in a very red state, of how these laws and interruption in care causes absolutely disastrous effects for these kids and their families, and also the medical staff, because we're doing our best to take care of them. And it's just, it's truly disastrous. These changes will have really horrible outcomes for our patients if we have any interruption to their care. So we just need to be aware that, you know, this is an emergency, and it's kind of all hands on deck. And we're all working very hard to make sure that the patients don't have an interruption in their care. It's definitely true that these are medications that are not going to disappear. It's just may get trickier to get a hold of them. They're not going away. And I love the comment earlier about get your good RX card, call the pharmacy, call mm-hmm. around. Sometimes, for instance, testosterone can be as cheap as $18 a bottle with a good RX card. So, you know, there are options. We're working to be very creative to make sure that we continue to provide this care in an uninterrupted fashion. But, you know, I appreciate everybody who's there on this program fighting the good fight, and we'll do the same at our end.
So thank you so much for calling in. Deanna, this situation where a pharmacist lies to a customer, that just sounds like fraud, right?
Yeah, that absolutely, in my estimation, violates the law. And we do have penalties specifically for folks who are intentionally discriminating to prevent somebody from seeking gender-affirming care.
Okay. We have another message that came in through the website from Jesse. Let's hear that now.
I'm the Albuquerque-based parent of a thriving trans child. If you saw my child, you would think that she is the happiest seventh grader that you have ever met. And yet, we live every day now with the reality that the federal government is trying to regulate her out of existence. There is no self-care or change of perspective or whatever that can get you through this. My child is angry and they're scared. Imagine being 13 and knowing that the president and the federal government and upwards of half of Congress are intent on making you cease to exist. But she knows who she is, and she just refuses to be anything other than herself. I wake up every single day braced for the next bad thing, and there's a weight on me that I cannot put down. But I keep on going because I have to be as brave about this as my child is. And seeing the joy that she gets from living in this world as who she truly is the thing that helps me keep pushing back, even when I'm scared and pessimistic. And where we get our strength, our community is wrapped around us right now and doing what it can to fight back. If you're struggling right now, I'd really encourage you to reach out and find your people. They want us to feel like we're isolated and no one cares about us, but this isn't true.
Thank you, Jesse. Adrian, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm so glad, because I wanted to go back to what Nicole said, too. I think TGRC is really proud and excited to be part of a coalition, including the ACLU and Equality New Mexico, strong warriors at the policy level that have made New Mexico one of the safest states legally in the country for LGBT people. Mm-hmm. But I think what we're seeing right now really helps to outline the limits of legal protections and policy protections. And I think in some ways, you know, we got a little bit too comfortable thinking that the Supreme Court would find in our favor or that we would have an elected president who would back trans people, when really all along, if you go back 10, 15 plus years, it was always the trans community that helped itself and helped each other and kept each other alive. And I think this is pointing us back in that direction. Mm-hmm. In that same way, I think right now our providers and our communities are learning a ton from what happened with abortion care and reproductive care. Right. There's a lot of going to ground and going to community to provide that care that had to take place that was outside of these systems of infrastructure that were collapsing around that care. So it just, for me, this is a great signpost to just keep doubling down on community, on connecting the community and putting resources into the community at a community level, because I think that's what's going to see us through this.
Okay. Thank you. We have a call from Nash in Albuquerque. Good morning, Nash.
Hey, Ty. Good morning. Hey, Ty. Hey, thanks, Nash, for having this conversation. I am a trans person who's picking up my testosterone at Walgreens this week. And I was wondering if the panel had any tips for ways to self-advocate, whether there's a response if I was told that I couldn't pick up my medication that might help me leave with the medication I need, whether I should record the conversation. I mean, is there anything that I could do if I went to the pharmacy today and was told that I can't have my medication?
So, Deanna, let's start with you. Is this something that you should, you know, record and document, or are there recourses?
Yeah, I think if it would make you feel more comfortable to record and have evidence of that conversation and potential refusal, I think you're well within your rights to do that. Additionally, I think we heard from Dee earlier that the interaction included a question about the reason for the prescription. You do not have to answer that reason. There's no requirement, at least from a pharmacist perspective, to ask for the reason for the care. They should just be asking, you know, for interactions between the medications and anything you're taking, but there's no medical reason why they need to know you're taking that medication. So, and like I said, we have laws on the books against discrimination for someone's gender identity. So asserting those rights and recording the conversation, if that makes you feel more comfortable, and not answering questions about the reason for taking certain medications.
And Dee, you've recently had this experience. Looking back, what advice would you give Nash?
I think it's great to just go into the situation knowing that this is possible, right? That would have helped a lot. Mm. I've thought back about like, oh, what could I have done differently? What should I have done differently? And I don't actually think that I can't think of a response other than the one that I did, which was to burst into tears. And I kind of stand by that. Like, I don't want to have a conversation about why you feel this way about me. Mm-hmm. I want you to know that you have hurt me, and hurt me badly. And I think that's what I communicated. But yeah, good luck, Nash.
I think that modeling of calling ahead is not a bad idea either. You can call the pharmacy that you usually use and just say, is there any reason at all that I would have any problem or be obstructed from picking up my prescription on any day of the week? You know, if there's someone who works there that's problematic, you can at least find out what their schedule is if you really want to continue at that pharmacy. But this is exactly what I mean about community resources, is if you go back 10 years, we all told each other, you can go to this doctor, you can't go to that doctor. You can get your clothes altered over at this place, but don't go over to that place. You know, it was, we knew the safe school that a trans child could go to where there were supportive teachers and principal. We knew the schools that we wouldn't recommend a family with a trans child to go to. So knowing the right pharmacy to go to where you're just always going to be treated kindly seems to me the better approach, because we do not need any more of this, these kinds of inputs right now. Trans people are already getting too much of this, like, hostility. So to go into a place where you think you might be treated that way, to me, seems counterproductive for all of our health.
You are listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Ty Bannerman. And listeners, we want to hear about your experiences today. Not all negative. We'd love to hear listeners call in with stories of times a business, agency, or community really came through for them, or people they care about. Call 505-277-5866. Shout out the people who are making a positive impact in your life. We'll be right back.
Caribou herds in Alaska are declining, and Alaska Native groups and conservationists are worried a new momentum for mining and drilling adds irreversible new threats. We'll take a look at the landscape for this important and unique species in Alaska and the factors that play into their survival on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
In February, show some love to KUNM. You value local news, music, and the voices that connect New Mexico, so consider donating that car or truck you no longer use. Maybe it's been sitting idle, or maybe the repairs just aren't worth it. Donating your vehicle is an easy, meaningful way to support the station you love. To donate your vehicle, visit KUNM.org or call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I just asked if listeners had places, businesses, communities that they wanted to shout out for having a positive impact on their lives. Dee, you had something to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that after I had cried in the Walgreens parking lot, I was in the middle of doing errands. And I was like, well, I am going to keep doing my errands because the next place I'm going is the co-op, where I know that they are like a supportive place and a safe place. And then I will go to my very favorite library branch, which, yes, is the Ernie Pyle Library branch, because that is a place of safety and support. And, yes, I did cry my head off in the Ernie Pyle Library, and the librarian was so kind and empathetic and caring. And it was a soothing sort of like, yes, right, like, like, there are safe places in this community, and there are, and I knew they were safe because they had shown that to me over time. Mm-hmm. You know, these are not like trans non-binary spaces per se, but that was really meaningful to me, that I knew that there were places that I could go to.
I'm also a huge fan of the Ernie Pyle Library, by the way. Very cozy. Lazarus, where do you go? Who do you turn to when you're feeling frustrated by events such as what happened with you in the Blue Cross Blue Shield coverage?
I mean, my community. Like, New Mexico has a lot of protections at the state level. We have incredible organizations. But as Adrienne Marie Brown says, small is all. And it's in these bubbles that we've built over decades in Albuquerque of mutual trans support. That's how I was able to get the news, was just by following the right people on Instagram, making sure to message each other, hey, if you've got this plan, get off it. Counseling people of like, okay, and then this is how you change a plan. We only get through this together. The government's not going to save us. We've survived a lot already, the trans community. We're not going to be disappeared. This is not going to be the end of us. So I really encourage folks to continue to find trans support online, in person. So I think what's really important right now is to remember that we are far from alone.
Mm-hmm. And there is action happening at the state government level to try to find areas to increase protection for trans folks and other vulnerable populations. One of those concerns currently targeted by the federal administration, which includes transgender folks, immigrants, and people of color, is data collection. I spoke to Marcus Trujillo, Communications Director for Indigenous Women Rising, about a bill currently before the legislature that seeks to protect our personal information from being misused, the New Mexico Community Health and Information Safety and Privacy Act, or NMCHSPAS. Let's go ahead and play that from Marcus now.
NMCHSPA is acknowledging that our data is being collected and sold and used without our consent. Corporations, data brokers, and government entities, you know, they gather our information without clear disclosure. And it's this coalition that's building is fighting back and pushing back against that. What this does is it addresses the critical gap between consumers and how our data is being collected, processed, and sold, and even stored online to third-party entities. This is a way that we can, as community members and specifically as Indigenous people, to take control back into our own hands, and rather than the corporations and the data brokers that are using that data for profit. We stress that our data is not for sale, and this is a tribal sovereignty issue when it comes to the violation of data privacy, and also the protection, of course, of our transgender and non-binary relatives as well. It would directly protect LGBTQ plus individuals, you know, immigrants and those who are seeking specifically reproductive health care. This would strengthen our protection of HIPAA-compliant laws as well. This could really provide the protection we need and ensure that federal government and corporations are not able to weaponize our data or target trans individuals, immigrants, from receiving that gender-affirming care. Within Indigenous Women Rising, our work is very much tied to gender-affirming care and people who are, of course, accessing reproductive health care. So yeah, I believe that CHSPA is essential to safeguarding our privacy and freedoms in an increasingly data-driven community and world.
So, Adrienne, the Transgender Resource Center is part of this coalition that came together to advocate for this legislation. Could you tell me what kind of data are we talking about here?
And the ACLU, of course.
And the ACLU,
maybe
yes.
Deanna can give us an update on the bill. I think there was some movement yesterday. Mm-hmm. But your geolocation data is tracked by a lot of websites, biometric data. And then that data is able to be given or sold or traded even with entities like ICE. So when we look at things like immigration enforcement, people crossing over state lines, shopping at Walmart or, you know, making purchases, this data is being tracked and then people can be tracked that way. So for trans and non-binary folks, we're deeply concerned about that as people are medical refugees from state to state right now.
Mm-hmm. And Deanna, as Adrienne mentioned, the ACLU is part of this coalition as well. How is this kind of data collection that we're talking about a civil liberties issue?
SB 53 is the name of the bill, and it passed the Senate House and Public Affairs Committee last night. So we're very excited about that. Specifically on civil liberties, if you think about the enormous footprint that we all leave in the digital space, everything from, you know, our posting on social media, our thoughts about different social issues, and our browsing history, where we're asking questions potentially about our health, like, where can I go to get this medication? And so corporations are collecting all of this information. Our government is collecting all of this information. And what we've seen federally is an uptick of scrutiny on people who are posting things that are contrary to this administration's opinions and really infringing on people's First Amendment rights to have opinions that are contrary to the government's. And so not only is it a civil liberties issue in terms of First Amendment rights, but the right to privacy, the right to access, you know, medical services, all of these things sort of are engendered by this bill. And I'll just highlight a couple of others. The Driver Privacy and Safety Act, which is also a bill that places guardrails on out-of-state actors accessing surveillance technology. So folks who are seeking protected medical care, as Adrian mentioned, there's a lot of medical refugees seeking protected health care in New Mexico, so preventing those surveillance technologies from erecting what's called a geofence to look at cars going into clinics or seeking in-person immigration services. And so we're excited that New Mexico will be at the forefront of protecting marginalized communities and their data.
So how exactly will the NMCHSPA specifically protect that data? Like, it's, we're talking about the internet. That data is already, you know, out there and undoubtedly has been scraped. What exactly will this bill do to prevent it from being either misused or mishandled?
So currently, we don't have a comprehensive data privacy law on the books in New Mexico. And for that reason, corporations are allowed to collect, process, sell all of our data. So anything I enter into my Fitbit or a menstrual tracking app, those companies could turn around and sell that data to private individuals, to data brokers, to build profiles of individuals in New Mexico. And that might sound innocent. Mostly they're, you know, targeting us for advertising, right? So it's a profit-driven model. But it could be more nefarious, making decisions about, you know, loan applications or housing applications, insurance companies who purchase profiles to determine how to set your insurance rates. And so it can really turn into a profiling machine and discriminating against people that they don't want. If they don't want a trans person living in their apartment building, or if they want to increase insurance premiums for a person because of the medications they take. And so I think we all need to be aware that that's happening, and we should have agency over our data.
And as you said, it had some movement last night. It passed the committee. Is that right?
Yes. So it passed its first committee and is headed to Senate Judiciary. And so there's many stops along the way, but we're glad to have the support of the governor and House leadership. So we are excited and hope that it's a viable bill because New Mexicans deserve data privacy.
And if listeners want to find out more, you can find a link to more information at our website, KUNM.org. So this morning we have talked a lot about specific threats to transgender rights and access to gender-affirming care. But now I'd like to just talk a little bit with everyone about the overall feeling of life in New Mexico for trans folks during this time. Dee and Lazarus, just going by your own personal experience, do you feel like the overall atmosphere of acceptance in New Mexico has changed since Trump's election? Lazarus?
I mean, not really. And I feel privileged to say that. And I'm also like quite inoculated in trans community, which is a blessing. You know, there's not a lot of places I could say that. But of course, these things at the federal level are going to leak in, and it's hard to kind of steel yourself from opening the news and just seeing strangers wish I was dead. And I'm someone that's already survived a murder attempt. I know what that feels like very personally. And, you know, I haven't felt the winds necessarily change in New Mexico at a personal level, but I do think people are being emboldened by what they're seeing at the federal level, seeing people being more openly transphobic, seeing more vitriol. I've definitely seen an uptick online. And again, it's hard to not let that get below the surface. You know, I know who I am. I stand proud in my identity. I'm surrounded by people that love and care for me. And also when you're getting just kind of like fire hosed in the face by hate from strangers, that can be a bit hard to combat. So, I mean, you know, one of the things I do is encircle myself with community, and also like Mr. Rogers' advice for when you're scared is I look for the helpers. You know, I see people at these organizations at the state level working to make sure that I can continue to be my full authentic self to the best of my ability. I surround myself with people that affirm and uplift my identity. And I try to combat all the hate I see with like life affirming joy. For every evil, mean tweet I see wishing me death, I go and watch a bit that a trans comedian's doing, like, you know, trying to create as much balance as I can in this life.
I love that Mr. Rogers is always there for us, too.
Right.
Dee, what are your thoughts?
New Mexico has been a wonderful place for me. I moved here in 2020, and I have loved living here. And I love that I have an X on my driver's license, that my state acknowledges that I exist as a non-binary person. I love that just being in New Mexico, the vibes are, I don't particularly care what your identity, like what choices you're making, right? Like people are letting each other live their lives for the most part, I would say, is the vibe that I get. And I really appreciate that because it is remarkably hard to have, you know, a president who doesn't believe that we exist or that we should exist.
It looks like we have a message from Jennifer, who left a message on our website. Let's go ahead and hear from Jennifer.
I am a recent transplant to New Mexico, and the reason I moved is because New Mexico is safe for trans people, and I wanted my son, who is trans, to be safer than the state we moved from. My name is Jennifer. I work for the federal government, so I can't give you much more information than that because I feel like that would be risking my job in this current climate. My son has blossomed here since we've moved, has met a ton of friends, is looking forward to graduating high school and becoming a nurse.
Thank you for calling in, Jennifer. So, Adrian, you are the executive director of the Transgender Resource Center, so you're probably have your finger on the pulse in a way that I don't. What are you hearing from folks who contact the center about how New Mexico may or may not be changing in terms of acceptance and so forth?
We hear a lot of fear. We hear a lot of fear from trans and non-binary people, and we hear a lot of fear from parents of young trans and non-binary people, as you can hear from who wanted to call in today and talk to us about this, right? So a lot. But I want to go back to what Lazarus said, because if you're not sure, if you hear that talk about community and you're out there and you're trans and you're thinking, I don't have that and I don't know where to find that, I don't know how to get into that trans community, please, please, please reach out to TGRC. We have 8 active support groups. You do not have to attend a support group meeting to be part of those groups. All of our groups have Discord servers where people are talking and sharing and asking questions without ever having to come into a group meeting if you're too apprehensive about that. So there are lots of ways to plug in and meet folks and get into that community. Please reach out so that we can help you to connect like that too.
And you, of course, are in a way on the front lines here. How are you doing?
Thank you for asking. Actually, I feel the same way. You know, I feel like I have so many people around me who affirm me and my identity and are wanting to be protective of our communities right now and want to help. And I'm so lucky to be in a job where I can see that I make a difference for folks in my communities. And that's really validating. It's really helpful to know that you're not just sitting here waiting for a bad thing to happen. We're out there trying to do our part and help the best we can.
What's giving you hope right now?
Other trans people, definitely other trans people for sure. And honestly, the parents, I find the parents to be the closest thing to a trans person without being trans. And they're on our side and they're going to help us turn the tide on this thing.
Well, that music means we have come to the end of the hour. Thank you to everyone who called or emailed. Big thank you to our guests, Dee Lazarus, Adrian Lawyer of the Transgender Resource Center, Deanna Warren of the ACLU. You can comment on this show by email at letstalk@kunm.org or find us on your favorite social media. Audio from today's show will be streaming at kunm.org soon. You can also get to the Let's Talk New Mexico podcast from Apple and Spotify. Come back next week. We're going to be talking about medical malpractice in New Mexico. Our engineer today is Marino Spencer. Florian Knowles handled the phones, and Megan Kamrick produced the show this week. I'm Ty Bannerman for Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.